This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Welcome to today's deep dive. I am your host, and as always, I am joined by our expert to help us unpack some pretty massive shifts happening right now.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to get into this one because it's such a huge topic today.
It really is. So to start us off, I actually want you, the listener, to just close your eyes for a second. Imagine a vast, perfectly silent library.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right, so it's cool. It's incredibly quiet, and it's filled with these highly efficient, completely silent librarians. You walk in, you hand them a slip of paper with a request, and they just disappear.
Yeah, they just vanish into the endless stacks to retrieve the exact book you asked for.
Exactly. And that's the entire transaction. You ask, they retrieve.
It's pure retrieval. I mean, you're just pulling something out of storage that someone else already created years ago.
But now, I want you to imagine that same serene library suddenly transforming. Like the walls expand outward, the temperature spikes. Yeah, and that pristine silence is just completely shattered by the deafening roar of industrial machinery. It is no longer a library at all. It's a blazing, hot, roaring factory.
Right, because the fundamental purpose of the building has changed.
Exactly. And to keep this entire facility from just melting down under its own heat, you have ice-cold liquid rushing through miles of thick pipes, pumping like blood through veins.
Which is a pretty wild visual.
It is. But the wildest part isn't the building itself. It's what the factory is actually doing. Because instead of retrieving old, dusty books from the stacks, this machinery is writing brand new stories from scratch. Instantly, the very second you ask for them.
And that, right there, is the core of what we are talking about today. We are talking about a fundamental shift in the physical infrastructure of our world.
Because we've spent, what, decades treating computers as just advanced filing cabinets?
Pretty much, yeah. What we're witnessing right now is the birth of automated intellectual manufacturing.
So today's deep dive is really all about completely dismantling what we think a computer actually is. We are stepping into the vision of a man known for his signature black leather jacket.
Ah, Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA.
The one and only. We're going to explore how we are transitioning from an era of simply retrieving data to mass-producing intelligence. And we'll unpack why, in this new world, the only programming language you will ever need to know is just human.
Yeah, and to really grasp where this is going, we have to look at what's changing right under our feet today, starting with the data center.
Those massive, windowless, highly secured buildings out in the desert, right? Or on the outskirts of major cities.
Exactly. For the last 30 years, your entire digital life has been built on what Huang calls search-based computing.
Okay. Break that down for us.
Well, for decades, those buildings were just warehouses. They were that quiet library you described earlier. They held your old photos, your emails, the movie you streamed last night. When you search for something on your phone, a computer simply went into that remote warehouse, found the pre-existing file, and retrieved it. But in May of 2025, at the Computex event in Taiwan, Jensen Huang made a declaration that really reframed the entire tech industry.
What did he say?
He said plainly, data centers are no longer warehouses. They are factories.
Okay, let's unpack this for the listener. So if the old internet was basically a waiter just grabbing a pre-made sandwich out of the fridge and handing it to you,
yeah,
then this new generative computing era is essentially a master chef standing at the stove cooking a custom meal to order the exact second you ask for it.
I love that. And take that chef analogy a step further. Let's say you want to know about King Sejong from the Joseon Dynasty.
Okay, sure.
In the old warehouse model, the system just finds an article someone else already wrote about him and hands you a copy. But in the new factory model, the AI doesn't retrieve a file at all.
It makes a new one.
Right. It uses its vast neural network to write a brand new, completely customized synthesis of King Sejong's life right there on the spot, and it's perfectly tailored to the specific context of your question.
Which really explains the physical transformation of the building itself that we talked about in the intro, because storing a PDF of a book takes almost zero effort.
Very little power, yeah.
But generating a new one requires a massive, massive amount of computational horsepower.
It requires a completely different kind of hardware. I mean, think about the difference between a traditional CPU, a central processing unit, and a GPU, which is a graphics processing unit.
Okay, what's the difference in practical terms?
Well, a CPU is like a single brilliant mathematics professor. Hmm. They can solve incredibly complex logic problems, but they do it one step at a time.
Right.
A GPU, on the other hand, which NVIDIA pioneered, is more like a massive stadium filled with hundreds of thousands of middle schoolers.
Hey, middle schoolers. That sounds like chaos.
It does, but hear me out. None of them are calculus professors, obviously, but if you give them all a basic math problem at the exact same time, they can solve millions of equations simultaneously.
Ah, okay. So that parallel processing is what generative AI really needs to function.
Exactly. It's not doing one hard math problem. It's doing trillions of tiny probability calculations all at once just to figure out what the next word in a sentence should be.
Which generates intense concentrated heat.
Oh, massive amounts of heat. That's why these new AI factories, which are packed with tens of thousands of NVIDIA's liquid-cooled Blackwell and Rubin GPUs, they basically act as a single interconnected brain.
And traditional air conditioning just literally cannot move the heat away from the chips fast enough, right?
Not even close. You have to pump chilled liquid directly over the silicon just to keep the building from catching fire.
Okay, so we have these roaring liquid-cooled factories. But if they're factories, what is the actual product coming off the assembly line? What is going into the box at the end of the day?
Well, Wang draws a direct line to the Industrial Revolution here. Before the 1800s, work was bottlenecked by human and animal muscle.
Sure. Horses and plows.
Exactly. Then we learned to burn coal to create steam, which gave us mechanical power. Later, dynamos converted mechanical energy into electricity, which is this invisible force that powered the entire 20th century.
Okay, so where does AI fit into that timeline?
Huang argues we've just invented a new kind of dynamo. We are pumping raw electricity into these AI factories, and the invisible product coming out the other side is raw intelligence.
Wow, pumping in electricity to manufacture intelligence.
And there is a specific, measurable unit for that manufactured intelligence. It's called a token.
A token. Okay, define that for
A
us.
token is just the smallest piece of generated information. So if the AI is writing an email for you, the token is a fragment of a word. If it's creating an image, the token is a pixel.
So these massive multi-billion-dollar facilities are essentially token-generating plants.
Exactly. That's their entire purpose.
But wait, hold on. Pumping in electricity to manufacture tokens sounds great until you look at the physical realities of the power grid.
Yeah, that is the elephant in the room.
Because we're talking about entire cities' worth of power required for a single building. You can't just plug 50,000 liquid-cooled GPUs into the local grid without melting the planet or causing rolling blackouts just so we can auto-generate emails.
You really can't. That energy bottleneck is the single biggest existential threat to this entire vision, and Huang is acutely aware of it.
I imagine he has to be.
Oh, yeah. In December 2025, during a summit in Washington, he actually delivered a very stark warning about the geopolitical reality of this infrastructure.
What was the warning?
He pointed out that while it takes the United States 3 years just to get the permits and build a single data center, China can build a hospital in a week.
Oh, wow. So it's a speed issue.
His warning was crystal clear. Having the smartest software or the fastest chip just doesn't matter if you literally can't plug it in.
So it's a brute force infrastructure race. I mean, you can't code your way out of a power shortage.
You really can't. Huang visualizes the AI industry as a five-layer cake.
Okay, I like cake. Walk me through the layers.
At the very bottom, the foundational layer is energy. You have to integrate nuclear, wind, solar, and natural gas just to feed the beast.
Right, the power grid.
If you secure the power, the second layer is the chips, the GPUs.
Okay.
The third layer is the physical data center housing them. The fourth is the AI model itself, so like a ChatGPT or a Claude.
And the top layer.
Sitting at the very top are the applications, the actual software interfaces you and I use on our phones and laptops.
But if that bottom energy layer falters, the entire multi-trillion-dollar cake just collapses.
Exactly. It's a fragile stack.
So let's play devil's advocate and assume we solve the energy problem. We build the nuclear microreactors, we cool the servers, we stabilize the grid. We are now mass-producing intelligence like it's tap water.
Okay, I'm with you.
What does that do to the global economy? Because right now, high-level human intelligence, say, a specialized corporate lawyer or a data analyst, is incredibly expensive and rare.
Well, when you mass-produce something that used to be rare, it fundamentally becomes cheap and abundant.
Right.
This is why Huang sees this shifting the entire global economy. Historically, the IT industry, so building computers, selling software like Microsoft Word, setting up local networks, that has been a $3 trillion market.
Which is a massive number.
It is, but it's just one specialized sector. Huang argues that AI is not an IT market.
What is it then?
AI is a $100 trillion market because it represents the automation of literally every other sector on Earth.
Jumping from 3 trillion to 100 trillion? I mean, that requires a complete redefinition of what we're actually buying.
It absolutely does. It comes down to the difference between a tool and a worker.
Okay, explain that.
Well, Microsoft Excel is a tool. It's a digital hammer. A hammer can't build a house sitting in a toolbox, right?
Right. It requires a human hand to swing it.
Exactly. You have to open the spreadsheet, clean the data, write the macros, format the cells. The software just assists your labor.
Okay, so what is AI in that analogy?
AI is what Huang calls digital labor. It isn't the hammer. It's the worker holding the hammer.
So you just tell the digital worker, hey, analyze the Q3 sales data and write the summary report.
Yeah.
And it just reads the context, makes the decisions, and does the work without you micromanaging the keystrokes.
Exactly. You manage the AI the exact same way you would manage an eager junior employee.
But here is where it gets really interesting, but also a bit confusing. An economy is built on moving physical goods.
Right.
Pouring concrete, harvesting wheat, driving trucks. A digital worker writing a flawless Excel formula is still just a brain in a jar. Can't build a house or stock a grocery shelf.
And that physical limitation is exactly why NVIDIA is pouring billions of dollars into physical AI.
Physical AI?
Yeah. They know that intelligence trapped behind a screen hits a ceiling. So to bring this digital labor into the real world, NVIDIA built a platform called the Omniverse.
The Omniverse? I mean, it sounds like something straight out of a comic book.
It really does, but it's essentially a hyper-realistic, parallel virtual universe designed specifically for engineering and physics simulation.
Okay, so how does that help a robot stock shelves?
Well, think about how a robot learns to walk. If you build a heavy metal two-legged robot and let it try to walk in a physical laboratory, it's going to fall down and break a million times.
Right, and you have to repair the motors, replace the sensors. That sounds incredibly slow.
Slow, expensive, and frankly, kind of dangerous.
Hmm?
Or think about teaching a self-driving car how to handle a snowy mountain road.
Hmm.
You really do not want an untrained AI controlling 2 tons of steel in the real world to learn by trial and error.
No, definitely not.
Which is exactly why you put them in the Omniverse first. It's not just a video game environment. It simulates actual real-world physics.
Down to what level of detail?
It simulates the exact friction of a synthetic rubber tire on virtual black ice at 14 degrees Fahrenheit. It calculates the gravitational stress on a robot's knee joint as it slips. Inside the Omniverse, a digital robot can fall down millions of times in a single hour. A virtual car can drive billions of miles in a rut, experiencing every weather condition imaginable.
So the AI learns all the hard lessons in a completely risk-free virtual environment. And then once it has mastered walking or driving, you just download that trained brain into the physical metal robot in the real world.
Exactly. The digital labor crosses the barrier and becomes physical labor.
That is wild.
Mm-hmm.
But if this digital workforce is going to be analyzing our medical records, driving our supply chain, and running our manufacturing, a massive geopolitical question arises.
Who owns the workers?
Exactly. If I'm a nation relying on this intelligence to run my power grids and hospitals, I'll be pretty nervous if a foreign corporation holds the keys to the kingdom.
You've hit on the exact anxiety that is driving international tech policy right now. Throughout 2025, Huang actually went on a massive global tour.
Where did he go?
From Taiwan and India to France and Saudi Arabia. And he was pitching a concept called sovereign AI.
Sovereign AI. So the idea that every nation needs to own and control its own artificial intelligence infrastructure.
Right. Relying on a foreign AI would be like outsourcing your entire water supply to another country. It's just inherently dangerous.
Or relying on an AI that fundamentally just doesn't understand your society. I mean, an AI trained by engineers in Silicon Valley inherently prioritizes Western legal structures, American cultural idioms, you know, specific concepts of liability and ethics.
Exactly. You can't just run the Korean healthcare system or the Indian legal system on a California-trained brain.
It wouldn't make sense.
No. Every nation has its own linguistic nuances and historical contexts. An AI needs to be trained on that nation's data, running on hardware located safely within that nation's borders to truly serve its people.
And we actually saw this play out at the APEC summit in Korea in November 2025, right?
Yes. That was a huge moment. The massive Korean tech giant, so Samsung, SK, Hyundai, they actually partnered up to install over 260,000 GPUs on Korean soil.
Wow. And they weren't just building a faster computer. They were building a distinctly Korean AI that understands the world through a Korean cultural lens.
But notice what hardware they were installing. 260,000 NVIDIA GPUs.
Ah, so NVIDIA is still at the center of it.
Always. This actually brings up a fascinating historical parallel. Think of the Roman Empire.
Okay, history lesson, I'm ready.
The Romans didn't just control the Mediterranean through military might. They controlled it by laying down roads. Those meticulously engineered roads allowed their troops, their trade, and their information to flow faster than anyone else.
So you're saying NVIDIA is essentially laying down the 21st century Roman roads?
Exactly. The chips and the data centers are the physical roads, but there's a software component too.
Right, because just handing someone a piece of silicon doesn't mean they know how to use it.
The secret weapon is a software platform NVIDIA created called CUDA. CUDA is the asphalt. It's the programming layer that allows developers to actually talk to the GPUs without having to write raw, incomprehensible machine code.
So every sector's AI, whether it's a medical diagnostic tool in France or a financial trading algorithm in Japan, is essentially a cart riding on NVIDIA's CUDA asphalt, powered by NVIDIA's silicon.
Precisely. Which locks all these developers into NVIDIA's ecosystem.
But wait. If NVIDIA owns the roads and the asphalt, they're basically the emperor of this new industrial revolution. And history shows us that emperors get lazy.
Oh, they definitely do.
How does a company with an effective monopoly not just become complacent and bloated?
The answer lies entirely in Jensen Huang's leadership psychology. He operates with an intense, almost legendary level of paranoia.
Really?
Paranoia.
Oh, yeah. Even now, in his 60s, bounding onto stages globally, he refuses to let the company rest on its laurels. He constantly reminds his massive workforce of a single sobering mantra.
What's the mantra?
He says, "We are always 30 days away from going bankrupt."
30 days away from going bankrupt. I mean, that is a terrifying way to run a multi-trillion dollar company.
It's a survival tactic. He knows that in the tech sector, the undisputed winner of today can be completely obsolete tomorrow.
That's true.
If someone else builds a better road or figures out how to bypass the roads entirely, NVIDIA falls. So he forces the company to innovate at a breakneck pace, laying new infrastructure before the rest of the world has even drawn the map.
Okay, let's bring this massive global infrastructure down to the listener's laptop for a second.
Sure.
We've talked about nuclear-powered data centers, $100 trillion economies, simulated universes. But how does a regular person actually interact with this?
That is the big question.
Because if accessing this new digital labor means I have to go to a boot camp to learn some complex new coding language, I mean, most people are just going to opt out.
And that's the most disruptive part of this entire transition. You don't have to learn a new language. In fact, traditional software as we know it is dying.
Dying? How so?
Well, at London Tech Week in June 2025, and even earlier at Computex in June 2024, Huang made a really bold claim. He said the era of the software factory is over. The new programming language, the only one you'll ever need, is simply human.
Think about the rigid way we use computers today, right? You stare at your screen, you want to write a letter, you click the Word icon.
Right.
You need to calculate a budget. You close that and click the Excel icon. You want to send it, you open Outlook. We bounce between these disconnected, prepackaged boxes.
It's incredibly inefficient. Huang envisions AI becoming the ultimate operating system. The OS of the future doesn't have an app store full of rigid tools.
So no more clicking icons.
You won't click icons. You will simply speak to the machine in conversational English or Korean or French.
Just giving it instructions.
Yeah, you'll say, hey, pull the sales data from last week, format it into a bar chart, compare it to last year's Q3 projections, and draft an email to the marketing team.
And it just does it.
The AI dynamically bridges all those tasks. It executes the logic without you ever having to open a specific piece of software.
The machine finally learned our language, rather than forcing us to learn its language.
Exactly. And this completely upends the economics of software development. Huang uses a brilliant analogy here. He calls it the napkin.
Like a disposable paper napkin at a diner.
Yep. Think about how software used to be built. It required teams of highly paid engineers writing millions of lines of code over several years.
Right. Massive investment.
Because it was so incredibly expensive to create, that software had to be generic enough that millions of people could reuse it for a decade just to justify the upfront cost.
You couldn't afford to build a sophisticated program that was only going to be used once.
Right. Nobody is going to spend $5 million developing a custom application just to help me balance my specific household budget for one afternoon.
That would be absurd.
But generative AI changes that math to zero. because the AI acts as the programmer, instantly writing the code in the background, the cost of creation just vanishes.
Oh, I see.
When you ask the AI a highly specific, complex question, it actually writes a custom, bespoke mini program just to solve your exact problem in that exact moment.
It processes the data, gives you the answer.
And then it throws that custom program away forever.
Just like, you know, wiping your mouth with a paper napkin and tossing it in the trash.
It's single-use, disposable software. It costs nothing to manufacture. It serves its highly specific purpose flawlessly, and it vanishes.
This has massive, massive implications for accessibility.
Oh, huge.
Because if I don't need to know Python or C++ Sun or Java to manipulate data, that means a high school student, my grandfather, and a veteran software engineer with 20 years of experience all share the exact same interface.
They do. They are all just talking politely to the computer.
It completely flattens the learning curve.
It's the ultimate democratization of computing. At the World Government Summit in February 2024, Huang pointed out a major irony in our education system.
What was the irony?
Well, for the last 15 years, we've told kids that they absolutely must learn to code to survive the future. Computer science was the safe bet.
Right. Everyone said learn to code.
Huang argued the exact opposite. He said the ultimate goal of the tech industry is to create technology where nobody has to code. As he put it, everyone is a programmer.
Just by speaking.
Exactly. Just like the Roman roads allowed a simple farmer to access the same trade routes as a wealthy merchant, this human language interface unlocks the power of massive computational intelligence for literally everyone on Earth.
You know, when you step back and look at the arc of this entire deep dive, it is just a staggering narrative.
It really is.
We're talking about Jensen Huang, a man who famously sketched out his initial hardware idea for NVIDIA on a literal napkin at a Denny's diner in 1993.
Full circle.
Yeah. And now, 3 decades later, he is ushering in an era of single-use napkin software powered by blazing hot, liquid-cooled AI factories that serves the intellectual engine for a $100 trillion global economy.
It is a breathtaking pace of change. But, you know, it does come with a sobering reality check.
Always does. What's the catch?
During that same London Tech Week, Huang addressed the natural anxiety people feel about their livelihoods in a world of digital labor. His advice was very sharp.
What did he tell them?
He said, you won't lose your job to AI, but you might lose your job to a person using AI.
Wow. The message is clear. We have to run into this new era, not walk. The doors to the factory are wide open, and the intelligence is just flowing off the assembly line.
It's no longer a question of if the technology works. It is entirely a question of how quickly we adapt our own workflows to utilize it.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over. If our machines are now doing the heavy lifting, if they're generating disposable software on the fly, rendering the physics of parallel universes, and acting as the digital workforce for the physical world, what happens to human craft?
That's a deep question.
Right. When we no longer have to build the tools from scratch or write the code line by line, do we simply become the managers of the world rather than its creators? If the quiet library has become a roaring factory, and that factory doesn't need our muscle or our technical syntax, What is the unique spark that we bring to the assembly line?
It's the defining question of our generation. We have the intelligence at our fingertips. Now we just have to figure out what's actually worth asking it to do.
It's something to think about the next time you open your laptop, stare at a blank screen, and ask an AI to write that email for you. Keep learning, keep pushing the boundaries, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.